Okay, good to be with you all here in Maryland once again. Nice to chat with you a little bit about what's been happening out here in California. And speaking of California, California is known as the place of cultic activity. You got a lot of different ideas out here, different religions, just like you do all over the country and all over the world. But California is well known for some of those cults, as we may call them. And that's the subject I have for you today. And specifically, it's how to avoid cultic tendencies, how to avoid cultic tendencies. Now, when I say cult, what I'm talking about here is a system of religious veneration and devotion, which is directed towards a particular figure or object, like the cult of Saint Olaf. So that's a definition of a cult. But lately, over the last 50 years or so, the definition of a cult has taken on a negative perspective. And when I say cult, let me give you a different definition. A religion or religious sect generally considered to be extremist or false, with its followers often living in an unconventional manner under the guidance of an authoritarian or charismatic leader. And if we think to California in the late 60s, you had a cult known as the Manson family, and Charles Manson was the leader of this particular cult. Now, obviously, that was a negative cult. Again, cult, the word itself, could have an innocuous connotation, but today, when we use the word cult, it usually has negative connotations associated with it. And again, I'm talking about people like the Manson family, like Jonestown and Jim Jones. I'm talking about Heaven's Gate in San Diego in the 1990s, the Scientology cult of today. So these are cults that we don't want to get involved with, we don't want to be a part of. And there are certain characteristics of these cults that we want to be aware of, because we don't want our group to fall into those cultic practices. Because when we look back at the Worldwide Church of God, when we look at some of the churches of God today, I'll be the first to agree with you that there are some characteristics there of cultic behavior. I'm not saying that the Worldwide Church was a cult, but it did have some characteristics that were cultic, especially towards the end of the Worldwide Church of God. And some of those characteristics have gotten into some other churches of God today that believe the same things we do. Okay, so again, I know that they are speaking truth, but they have some tendencies which are cultic, and we need to call out those tendencies and make sure that we know what they are. So if a leader like Mike Reese, again, I'm just joking, Mike, I'm not saying Mike Reese is a cult leader, or Mike James, if you see us showing these types of characteristics, you need to call us out about it and bring it to our attention, because we don't want to become cultic in our worship patterns. So that's why I'm giving this sermon today. I want you to be able to recognize these tendencies, which are cultic, and I mean negative cults in nature. Now, the first thing I want to do before I get to some of the practices of cults is I want to talk about, why do people stay with cults? Why do they first get involved with a cult? And some people will say, well, they just don't know enough. If you look at the Moonies, which Faith has some history with, what did the Moonies do? What was one of their practices? They got on college campuses. And why would they go to college campuses? As many other cultic groups do, as many other religions do. Why a college campus? Because young people are away from home for the first time. They are going to hear things that are new to them for the first time, and many times they are going to look into and investigate those things. So sometimes people will fall into cults because they don't have enough information. But here's another reason. Sometimes people are too smart for their own good. You will find a tendency among cultic groups where they will have very intelligent people, because these intelligent people become too full of themselves and they believe that they have greater knowledge than other people. So that's why they're part of a cult, because the cult knows better than everybody else. So you will have people on both sides of the spectrum, people who don't know a lot and people who do know a lot, could fall under the sway of a cult leader for those reasons. Another reason that people fall into and stay with cults is because they get something from it. Now, what do I mean by that? We are programmed, our brains are programmed to be part of a larger community. Okay, it's just part of being human. And if your first community is a cult, you might feel good within that cult because they are meeting needs of community for you. They also are getting the releases of certain chemicals in your brain. When you sing together with other people, when you pray together with other people, dopamine and oxytocin is released within your body. It gives you a good feeling. So if this is the first religion you've had experience with, and you get this good feeling by being amongst these people, you may want to stay with that good feeling. And you won't understand when someone's coming to you and trying to get you out of that, that a better feeling could be found in some other organization. And that leads to another reason why people fall into and stay with cults. They have a fear of alienation. There's, again, a compulsion within humans to conform, to be part of something. And when you are part of something, like your family, like the religion that you grew up in, it's hard to break away from that. Unless God's really working with you and trying to open up your mind. Look around the world today. Where are most of the Hindus today? In India. That's where Hinduism began. Where are most of the Christians today? In places like the United States. Because what was, other than the indigenous religions that were here before us, what was the first religion that came to the United States? It was Christianity. The United Kingdom, what was some of the first religions there other than the pagan religions? Christianity, once again. When you look at China, again, animistic religions, Confucianism, most of those people continue to follow those religions that they grew up in, that that country started in. Again, why? Because it's hard for us to break from our family, from our culture, and get out of that milieu into something new because of our fear of alienation. So again, that's something that holds people into cultic practices. Now, some of the information I'm relaying to you today comes from a book titled Cultish, The Language of Fanaticism by Amanda Montell. And in her book, she says religions provide meaning, purpose, community, ritual that we all need. When we look today out in the world, organized religion is decreasing in its popularity. And what do you find taking its place? You find exercise, you find other religions, you find paganism. And what you find in those exercise religions, what do I mean by that? Soul cycle, have you heard of it? That's where people come into a room, they get on a bicycle, and they start pedaling as fast as they can for a workout. And the leader of that group is becoming like a priest to these people. He's taking the place. He or she is taking the place of your local priest or your local minister or your local rabbi. And what they are doing is they are becoming your friend. They are becoming your confidant. This isn't happening just with SoulCycle. It's also happening with things like CrossFit, where people allow their religion now to become their workout or their gym. And you will find that amongst these various new age groups out there, athleticism or the workout is taking the place of what church used to do for these young people. You can read about it in Montel's book. It's very interesting to see how these athletic gurus are trying to become like your priest or your minister. They counsel you. They help you with your personal life. It's an amazing new thing that's going on in our culture today with these exercise outfits and these different groups that are taking the place of organized religion. Our young people are moving into things like that. Another reason why people don't leave cults is because of the illusion of intimacy. You feel like you're intimately connected to the people within your cult. And that is very true, especially with cults who have a authoritarian or charismatic figure. Now, when we look back at our church history, we definitely had some charismatic figures, some teachers who were very good at what they did. People like Herbert Armstrong, Garner Ted Armstrong, Ron Dart. These guys were a notch above many of the teachers and preachers that are in the Church of God movement today. And I don't mean a notch above from a sense of their character. I mean a notch above in their ability to speak and to connect with people. And when I say that, I want to bring up the example of Jim Jones. Here's a quote from someone who was in the Jonestown cult. They said Jim Jones had an impossible charm, and I'm quoting them. He had an impossible charm, a knack for relating to anyone. Now, that's hard to do. It's hard to relate to anyone. But notice what it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, beginning in verse 19. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19, though I am free and belong to no man, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I've become all things to all men, so that by all possible means I might save some. Now, why do I read that scripture? Here's why. Jim Jones read that scripture. Jim Jones knew his Bible. And he knew what Paul had to say here. And what Jim Jones did is he went and visited other churches. And he watched how the preacher connected with his audience. He went to many different churches. He studied Hitler. He studied people who were known to control other people. He studied a minister named Father Divine, who believed that he was God incarnate on the earth. And he studied the practices of these great manipulators, and he used what he learned. That's why he was able to speak to a person from the inner city and make them feel like he was one of them. That's why he was able to speak to intellectuals and make them feel like he was an intellectual. Jim Jones knew what he was doing. Listen to this quote. "The way that he spoke, he was a great orator. It moved you. It inspired you. I was just enthralled." Now, I'm not saying that we should not be great orators, that we should not be better at trying to be public speakers. But what I'm saying is be careful. Be careful when you like what someone is preaching, when you like how they sound, when you like the gestures or the passion that they're using, because we're all human and we can run off and follow that characteristic of speaking rather than the message they are delivering. What's most important, folks, is the message they are delivering and whether or not it stacks up with your Bible. That's what you look out for. Don't say I'm of Paul or I'm of Apollos or I'm of Bill Watson or I'm of Adrian Davis. You might like how they speak to you and how they come across, but they better be speaking from the Bible and what it says. Watch that. Watch that. Watch it with me too. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Charlie Manson. Looking at Jim Jones as one example, how could a lifetime criminal connect to people? Well, folks, who was he connecting to? These were mostly girls who came from dysfunctional families, who didn't have a father figure in their life. Charlie Manson knew how to manipulate them. He knew how to talk to these 18, 19, 20-year-old girls, being a 30-something-year-old man who lived a life of crime all of his life. From the time he was a teenager, he knew exactly how to manipulate those young women to kill for him. So he didn't have thousands of followers. He had 10, 20 followers who would kill for him because he knew exactly how to manipulate them. So the Bible speaks about that. Don't be sold on someone who appears as an angel of light. Make sure they are speaking from the pages of your Bible. Now, let's get into talking about cultic practices, tendencies you find that could lead to a negative outcome, could turn a good church. Are some of these cultic practices. Let me get into them. Number one, it's an us versus them jargon. So what you will find even among totalitarian political leaders is they will use an us versus them jargon to create a schism between their followers and the outside world. You see this going on in the world today. In what some of our totalitarian rulers are giving to their people in propaganda. But you also saw this within the Worldwide Church of God. There was an us versus them jargon that they used for many years. And it worked so well that when the Worldwide Church of God fell away from the truth, people who still believe the truth stayed with them. for many years after the worldwide church became Grace Community, and they were preaching against the Sabbath, against the holy days, that they were no longer needed, when they were preaching against our concept of the God family, and they were getting back into Trinitarianism. Why did people stay who didn't believe that? Why did they stay? Because they thought this had to be the Church of God. It couldn't become anything else, because it was always us versus them. And you find this same tendency in some churches of God today, where they have an us versus them mentality, that they are the only true church, that all the other churches of God are not the true church. And again, this is ridiculous. God can call people wherever. He wants. God can have people who are not part of this church be part of God's church. That's up to God to decide. So again, watch that us versus them mentality. Again, when I first wanted to get with the Worldwide Church of God, they wanted me to read more booklets than I had read. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense to me. We should bring in anybody who wants to come and meet with us. Christ went out to everybody, sinners and saints alike, to speak and talk with them. So we cannot be exclusionary. We have to be open to everyone. So watch that particular cultic tendency. Another problem with cults that you will see is authoritarian leadership, that the leader knows all, sees all, hears all, has all the answers. Watch out for that. Again, what will you see that manifest as? You will see it possibly manifest as, we know the truth of God. We know when the end is coming. You have to come to me to get the answers. My wife told me a story of being involved with a church here in the United States, and she wanted to ask the minister a question after the service was over. And she had to go through a couple people to even get to the minister. And they told her that she couldn't ask the minister a direct question. So she realized that this was cultic. And she got out of that organization. But that is a thing that you will see within cultic organizations. You can't talk to the head guy. You have to go through the handlers to get to him. Again, if you see that, watch out. Watch out for those types of organizations. John chapter 13 and verse 15, Jesus gives us an example of what we should be doing with each other. We should be serving each other. And that goes for the ministry also. The ministry especially should be serving the people, not lording it over the people, not controlling the people. In John 13 and verse 15, it says, I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. And right before Jesus says this, he washes his disciples' feet to give them the concept, the idea that they have to serve each other. He was their master, yet he was serving them. And so the leader has to take the last position sometimes. And that works both ways, that if you're really following Christ, you are going to serve others. And especially the ministry should be serving others rather than controlling others. Another place you will see this is in 1 Peter 5 and verse 3. And that's where we read that you don't lord it over people. Let me go ahead and read that to you. 1 Peter 5 and verse 3. Not lording it over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. Okay, we've got to be examples. Me, Mike Reese, other speakers have to be examples to the flock. The leadership in Tyler, Texas, the leadership of any church organization has to be an example to the flock that they are leading. So let's continue on with this now. I want to look at another thing that you will find within cultic groups, and that's insider language or knowledge. Now, what do I mean by insider language or knowledge? The Heaven's Gate group in San Diego, they use these phrases that you are all students of the kingdom of heaven, that those on the outside are part of the Luciferian program. So they had these buzzwords and these buzz phrases that they used, and only they used them. Within Jim Jones's People's Temple, he called his people my children. He called people on the outside the outside forces. The Church of Scientology today talks about going clear. Now, if you haven't read up on the Church of Scientology, you don't know what going clear means, okay? The Church of Scientology talks about body thetans invading your body. Once again, if you don't know what body thetans are, you have no understanding of what Scientology is talking about there. They have their own insider language. That is something to watch out for within cultic groups. Cultic groups also have a flair for the dramatic. And again, Church of God history shows some of this, okay? We jump on, some of us in the past have jumped on any news story that is in the news today. Whatever it may be, we sometimes jump on that, seize upon it, and think that it might have some connection to the end. You know what? It might. It might. But you know what? I can remember many news stories from the 1980s when I got into the Church of God that Garner Ted Armstrong was preaching about that had absolutely nothing to do with the end times. In the 1970s, the Church of God had a man who said 1975 was an important date in history, that the end might come in 1975. It didn't happen, folks. They were seizing upon the dramatic. Why? Because when you seize on the dramatic, you get people enthralled. You get people interested. You get people to think they better listen to you because you're talking about the end and you want to know when the end is. Folks, what's more important than when the end is what you're doing right now today, how you're treating your spouse, how you're treating other people in the church, how you're treating people who aren't in the church. You better get that together, folks. You better get that together instead of worrying about when the end is going to come. Okay? You can speculate. You can read the Bible, look at prophecy. No problem. I get it. I'm interested in that too. But the Bible makes it clear what is more important is making sure you got yourself together and you're ready for the end. Are you ready for the end, folks? That's what's more important than when the end is going to actually come. So watch that flair for the dramatic. Jim Jones was a master at it. Father Divine was fantastic at it. Adolf Hitler, he was a master at it. He used it against the Jews, the flair for the dramatic. Our problems have something to do with these people. Watch it, folks. Watch it. Jim Jones would pick out news items that were in the paper on a regular basis, and he would catastrophize about that news item. He would make it bigger than it really was. Folks, watch it. Watch it. Another thing that cults do is they don't allow debate, and this is very important. What we do in CGI, we allow debate. We have a council, a ministerial council, that if you don't agree with something we teach, to something that's in our doctrinal statement, our systematic theology project, you can go on our website today and read it. You can read our doctrines and beliefs right on our website. We're not hiding it. It's there for anybody to read. And if you've got a disagreement with it, you can write a paper. And you can send it to the ministerial council. And you know what they'll do? They'll respond to your paper. And they will tell you why they disagree with you or why they agree with you. We're open to debate. You can talk after services to me about anything I say. You can talk to Mike Reese about anything he teaches after services. We are not afraid of debate, but the cultic leaders are. They don't want you to question their authority. They don't want you to question what they believe and what they teach. Watch it, folks. Watch it for people who have issues with debate and you questioning what they have to say. And again, they'll use language. It is what it is. Or boys will be boys. Or everything happens for a reason. It's all in God's plan. Truth is a construct. None of this matters on a cosmic level. Those are some statements cultic leaders will use to snuff out debate and not engage you in conversation on the issue. They're afraid of open Bible studies. I had an open Bible study last night online. Again, I stop throughout the Bible study and I allow comments and questions. And you know what? Sometimes I don't have an answer, but I say I'll do research and I'll come back and try to give you an answer. But you know what else? Sometimes there isn't an answer, and that's okay too. We don't have an answer for everything. God hasn't given us the answers to everything, but he's given us enough information to know how to get to salvation, and that's what matters the most. Jim Jones would use a loudspeaker when they got to Guyana. And whenever Jim Jones spoke on the loudspeaker, that loudspeaker would go throughout the compound to every building, every facility on the compound would hear Jim Jones speak. And when he spoke, everybody else had to shut up. At the Heaven's Gate cult, they spoke in whispers and hushed tones. Now, why? Why do you think they spoke in whispers and hushed tones? Because you're only going to be able to speak to one person at a time. So the cult leader can watch that. He can monitor that, okay? And he can see if somebody spoke loud, we better get them out of here. I can control you if you're only talking to one person at a time. It's harder to get the whole group to go against you when you do that. But if you speak in hushed tones, if you speak very quietly, then it's much easier to control those types of people. Another thing that you saw within cultic groups is something they call love bombing. Now, when I was visiting, I visited a number of churches when I was in college because I was really investigating everything. I was reading all these things about religion and Christianity, and I wanted to investigate it. I wanted to experience it. So I went to various churches to see what was going on there. And in some of these churches, what would happen is they would love bomb you. And this also happened when I visited the Hare Krishnas in Bethesda, Maryland. They had a group there. They had a home where they would meet there. Yeah, I was looking at other religions too, just to check them out and make sure that I understood the way I should go. And one of the things I noted with the Hare Krishnas and a couple of the churches I visited is they would do something called love bombing. Now, what is love bombing? That's when people throw a lot of attention, a lot of help, a lot of gratitude, a lot of praise on you. And they do it consistently, and they do it over and over. That's what we call love bombing. Now, I felt kind of weird when people threw all this praise and honor at me. When I got love bombed in a church here, I got love bombed by the Hare Krishnas there, because it made me feel funny. Again, there's nothing wrong with loving people, with showing them gratitude and helping them and showing them affection. The problem is when you do it in a manner that is over the top, that's beyond the pale, that is a sign to watch for. When people are being so gracious and nice to you, it may make you feel a little funny, and that's good that you're feeling funny, okay? That listen to what your self is telling you about too much attention or too much love. And you find this among some cults. And why does it work? You might wonder why it works. Well, here's why it works. Think about people who are coming from a dysfunctional family. Think about someone who's on a college campus all alone and they're not with their family anymore. Think about someone who's never experienced what real love is in their life. And there are thousands and thousands of people like that in the world. So when someone shows them a little attention and they never receive that attention in their formative years or as a teenager, well, they're going to gravitate towards that because everybody needs love. That's what God is all about. So these cults will use love in that way. They know that everybody needs it, even those who've never understood what it really was, and they will lay it on thick. So you want to seek that out. And that's another reason why people get into and stay with these cults. Again, watch the kindness, watch the acceptance, watch the rosy words. Now, again, we should do that like our friend here, Pauline, who's brand new to our group. And I'm glad you're here, Pauline, visiting with us. But what I'm saying is when it's over the top, when it's ridiculous, it's too much. And you know when it's too much. You know when it's too much. Watch out for that. Now, probably one of the most important things to look for to realize if you're in a cult or not is control. Control. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean cultic leaders and cults want to control your world. Now, my wife, I told you about the experience she had with that leader within that church Christian group that she was attending when she first came to the United States. Also within that group, that same group that my wife was in, every day of the week, let me repeat that, every day of the week, that church had an activity for you. Wednesday night Bible study, Sunday church worship, Monday, you got to go out on the street and evangelize. Tuesday, we're going to have a spaghetti dinner. Thursday, we're going to have a counseling session. Friday, we're going to have a rap session. Every day of the week, you had an activity. Watch those types of groups. Watch those types of organizations that are trying to eat up and gobble up all your time. Now, that's not to say that there's anything wrong with a Wednesday night Bible study. Or that's not to say that you shouldn't get together with people within your church group to build your relationships, to go out to lunch with them, to have dinner with them from time to time, to do volunteer work together. But you know when too much is too much, okay? And you gotta watch out for that, okay? Another thing they will do is things that were done in places like Jonestown, the Branch Davidian compound in Waco, Texas. What are some of these controlling things? Well, they want all your money, okay? They want you to sell your property and give it to the church. They want you to go back to work and give money to the church if you're retired. Again, what's that about, folks? That's not about you making decisions. That's about them controlling you and telling you what to do. You've got to make those personal decisions in your own life. Jim Jones kept his people tired in Guyana, Jonestown. Do you know why? What happens when you're tired, folks? Think about it for a minute. What happens when you're really tired? You don't want to do anything, okay? You want to sleep. You want to lay down. You want to take a rest. So why do these cults keep you busy all the time? because when you're busy all the time, you don't have time to think and ponder about this organization that you're a part of. So watch the control of your time, the control of your work, the, even to this degree, the control of your food. Some of these cults would limit your food intake. They would force you to fast at certain times. And again, we want to leave that open to you. Fasting is something you should do, but you'll notice the Bible only gives you one day of the year that a called fast is for, and that's the Day of Atonement. Now, did Jesus fast at other times? Did Paul and the apostles fast at other times? Yes, they did, but they decided when those times were. Everybody didn't decide for them. So that's why we are very leery of calling a complete church fast for everyone, okay? We're leery of that because of that reason, okay? There's nothing wrong with the church calling a fast for a specific day, for a specific issue, but it should always be voluntary. We should not force our people to fast as some of these church groups do. Another thing about controlling your world gets into what I was saying about when the end is coming. Again, if you are believing that the end is coming within a year, what's that going to do to your life? Do you know that within the Worldwide Church of God, some people sold their businesses? Some people sold possessions they had because they thought the end was coming, and then it didn't happen, folks. We don't want to lead people into that. We don't want to lead people astray into that type of thing. So we don't know when the end is coming. I think it'll be apparent to those who believe in God when it's really coming. Don't worry about that too much, folks. Don't worry about that too much. These cults, many of these cults, were all looking for the end. Think about the Heaven's Gate movement in San Diego. What was it all about? The Hale-Bopp comet is coming. It's going to pass by the Earth. That's our signal for us to get on the spaceship and go off into the galaxy, for us to reach the next level of our spirituality. They were looking for their end, just like Charles Manson. What was he doing? He wanted to start a race war. That's why he wrote pigs and things like that in those houses when they killed the Tate, when Sharon Tate was killed and the LaBianca family was killed a few nights later. They were trying to start a race war. Charles Manson read the Bible. He read Revelation. He thought he was going to be the one who started the end of time. Again, what was Hitler doing? He wanted to start a Third Reich, okay, a thousand-year reign. What do these cult leaders say? The end is coming. Follow me. Come follow me. The Solar Temple in Europe. Where did those people follow them? They followed him to suicide. All these cult leaders are leading you to what? To your end, folks. Be careful. Be careful out there of people who are telling you they know when the end is coming. Do they really know when the end is coming? Look at the history of those who said they knew when the end was coming. They were all wrong, folks. They were all wrong. Okay? But what does it do to the people within that organization? They start living their life in a different way than they would normally live it. Understand what I'm telling you here today. I don't have a problem with trying to understand prophecy, reading prophecy, warning people of what's going to come. But what is more important is building godly character within yourself and emanating that, showing that to the people around you. That is more important than understanding when the end is coming. But ask yourself this question. How many of our sermons focus on the end coming rather than getting ourself together? Again, we do a good job, I think. We have a variety of sermons, but we need to be careful. We need to be careful and take note of what these cultic leaders are doing and why they're doing it, because we are influential to others when we speak from the pulpit. And we need to be very careful in what we are getting people to think and believe when we speak to them. Now, to finish things up, I want to turn over to Acts chapter 4 and verse 12. Acts 4 and verse 12. Again, you've all heard those stories about that cult leader, the cult leader. Again, why is it that one person has so much sway over somebody's life? You got to watch out for that, folks. You got to watch out for yourself that you are so enthralled by this individual or that individual. You know, I can remember in the church years ago, everybody swooned about Ron Dart and how he taught. Okay, he's the best teacher, and Garner Ted and all his prophetic utterances. You know, wow, Garner Ted's really laying it on them, you know. People would swoon about these leaders in the church. Folks, that's not what it's about. Fantastic that Garner Ted led people to the truth. It's fantastic that Ron Dart opened the Bible up to people. But folks, it's about the Word of God. It's about Acts 4, verse 12. Acts 4, verse 12. Salvation is found in no one else, for there is no other name under heaven given to men by which we must be saved. Mark it in your Bible. Nobody else. Jesus Christ only. Don't go after Paul. Don't go after Apollos. Hey, he might have a nice message. Hey, he might have a nice study. But don't let that take you away, folks. Don't get caught up in the human nature of it, folks. Don't get caught up in your carnality. Remember what's important. Don't forget what is most important. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Philippians 2, verse 12. Garner Ted Armstrong can't get you saved. Ron Dart can't get you saved. Only Jesus Christ is going to get you saved. And it's all in the Bible. You got it right there. Go to it. Focus on it. Read it. Understand it. And don't fall for the cultic practices.